The Guardian.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Here we go again. They get put out more regularly than a cat with a weak bladder. They are England. 2-1 with Uruguay. That means Brave, Wayne and company are set to be in and out of the cup fractionally faster than a miser's teabag. Who, why, what and whatever. A nation demands answers. We'll see what we can do. Meanwhile, other nations that win things department. Colombia, who storm past Ivory Coast, while the Greeks shut up shop, something they've had a bit of practice at. After that, it's on to our Monster Friday preview. France, Switzerland, Ecuador, Honduras, and everyone's second team since forever, Italy against Costa Rica. I can't believe we're down here at the docks again, James Horncastle. Who's this ship for?
Not the good ship England.
No.
Coming in to perhaps take our boys home.
I can't believe it. Hey, Scott Murray.
Hey.
What are you doing down here?
Here I am. I've just, I'm still excited after covering Japan. I can't even remember who they played. I've lost it.
Greece?
It was the worst
Greece,
game
man.
Of football. It was Greece. Yeah.
Living the dream.
Greece was the word.
Yeah. All right. Wow. I almost think we should talk about that right off the bat, just to let you work it out of your system.
Yeah, but there's nothing to say.
A nation demands.
That's it covered.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
It was 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
Japan had loads of chances, but failed to beat a 10-man Greek team.
No, there weren't even chances.
There were loads of chances.
There wasn't much.
Were there not?
There wasn't much.
No chances, James?
Apart from that one, that was
the slight open goal.
Yeah,
when he slid in on the left.
Yeah,
but that was never going in.
Anyway,
it was just one of those matches where you knew it wasn't going in.
It was a pretty big day in World Cup land. Yeah, a day that we previewed yesterday. Perhaps we were a little bit remiss in this. Do you remember how with our chum Davy Lane, we were saying, well, there's absolutely no way Uruguay are going to give England any problems at all. Davy himself tweeting in, he says, yeah, when I said there was no one to give Suarez the ball, I had forgotten about Stevie. Yeah, very much the thing. Where to begin? England on the brink of disaster. Were they that bad? Or was it another of those games, a bit like Italy, which, you know, had... Had Wayne put that header away, could have gone different?
No, I don't think it was. I think Joe Hart's comments afterwards were
what
accurate.
Did he say?
Well, he said that he thought they played well again.
Oh.
I think perhaps maybe they did shortly after the goal, the equalising goal they scored, when it was all quite frenzied and they looked for a moment like... they would perhaps be the ones to...
How can he can't see anything anyway. He's stood back. You can't see anything from a goal.
Question is judgment on that, but they were nervy from the outset. Uruguay, we suspected, probably couldn't play any worse than they did against Costa Rica. They were without the player and captain who was culpable and has been past it, as many West Brom fans will attest, and Diego Lugano. And Suarez, all the question marks about his fitness, I don't think he was 100% fit, but he was fit enough to be devastating.
Yeah, Suarez in a wheelchair a month ago.
Yeah, 28
in a wheelchair
days
a month
later.
Ago. Oh, I dreamt this, he said, because he was in tears at the end. This meant a lot to him. I dreamt this. I'm enjoying this moment because of all I suffered, the criticism I received. So there you go. How about that? Astonishing performance. Just remarkable. I mean, the first goal, as Cavani breaks down the left...
Mm.
You're looking and you see there's England's back line, there's back four, they're all in position. There's a couple of midfielders tracking back to cover.
There's Joe Hart.
And there's all there is Luis Suarez. You're thinking, well, there's absolutely no... Oh, my word, they've just scored. How?
But Jagielka goes walking off,
doesn't
he?
Was it him or was it Glenn Johnson who ran away from Cavani?
Well, there was him. I mean, in the usual, in the usual stampede to look for scapegoats, I think there's probably about seven or eight in England shirts out there yesterday. But it was Jagielka that sort of left Suarez on his own, which he seemed to sort of run towards the play. Very strange decision. Mm. But it was still a great header.
Yeah, that's true.
And obviously, I mean, it was great work from, I think, was it Ladera in the centre of the park to Rob Gerrard. I mean, it was a sort of litany of errors, really.
For Steven Gerrard,
yeah. and Joe Hart, and Wayne Rooney, and Jagielka,
but especially Steven Gerrard. I mean, that certainly seems to be the feeling. What with his very unfortunate header for Suarez on that second goal.
Well, also put in the context of how Liverpool's season ended and kind of unravelled with him slipping, having said, "Let's not let this slip now." It's a shame. I mean, you feel similar sympathy to him that you do sort of towards Casillas, in that, you know, seeing sort of a genuine great player make mistakes which could cost, well, have probably cost his team their place in the World Cup. But we can't just put it all on his shoulders.
I mean, I think weirdly he's more at fault for the first goal than the second one. It was interesting on both ITV and BBC that the pundits there didn't seem to... I wonder whether they were trying to like soften the blow for Gerrard a bit because he was involved in both goals. But certainly with the second goal, all right, it was his header that it came off him that went through. But Rio Ferdinand, Glenn Hoddle, Gus Poyet all mentioned that it was Jagielka and Cahill both made incorrect decisions in their positioning. And kind of, and that was another reason Suarez was allowed to.
I'm going to suggest that Gerrard's woeful evening didn't end with those two mistakes. There was also his unbelievably wayward shooting, which was a feature of the first game as well. And there's, you know, one or two Liverpool games as well. I mean, a lovely bloke and often a terrific professional. But yeah, this wasn't his World Cup, at least so far. We'll talk a little bit more about England in a second, but a bit more on Uruguay. Quite stirring, if medically unsound, moments there with Alvaro Pereira with that what looked like concussion. And then he came roaring back and insisted he wouldn't be taken off and then headed the ball and laid in a crunching challenge. It was a different looking Uruguay side from that first game.
Yeah, I mean, some people remarked that is Uruguay, this kind of never say die kind of you just can't stop them kind of attitude. And other people also saying, yeah, he should have been taken off because of the concussion he suffered. I mean, he looked out for, I don't know, 45 seconds.
He did, didn't he?
It looked really bad when you saw the contact with Sterling's knee. But you know, I mean, it was a bit like the case with Hugo Lloris and at Spurs with AVB, where you have a player who comes round and is determined to stay on the pitch, and
unless he wasn't actually concussed and he was just time wasting before that,
perhaps that's very crafty and South American, because English people don't do that. But apparently there is a FIFA medic on hand as well, who can overrule the medical staff of a country. So, for example, if Uruguay were to say, "No, we're going to keep him on," they could say, "No, well, look at him; he's out. Take him out."
Killer stat for you, Scott. Since beating Kuwait in 1982, how many World Cup matches have England won exclusively live on ITV? This is since 1982, remember, when they beat Kuwait. How many?
That's for that to be a stat, it's got to be zero.
What, 32 years. So 32 years. How many games when they've been on exclusively on ITV, World Cup, how many have they won?
It's got to be zero.
It's not, actually. They have beaten one team. It was Trinidad in 2006.
That's quite scary,
isn't it? Anyway, in our search for answers, we've gone straight to the top. Boom! It's Jonathan Wilson. Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm very well. Jonathan, what just happened?
Every tournament exits, everybody's always looking for the panacea. Everyone's rooting for England to perform. England have lost two games in neither of which they've disgraced themselves. They lost two games narrowly. In both games, they had more shots than the opposition. I'm not going to pretend England played well in this World Cup, but I don't think they were terrible either. And, you know, on another day, they'd have beaten Italy. On another day, they'd have beaten Uruguay. I mean, that Rooney header from the yard, that could easily have gone in. Rooney and Sturridge both had good chances. On another day, Godin would have been sent off. And on another day, you wouldn't have played against Suarez in such brutal form.
On another day. Why is it always another day and not this day with England? There must be something we can put our fingers on. Is it the fact that England, perhaps beset by this consciousness that they are continually underachieving, panic whenever they have the opportunity to put that right?
Yeah, I think there's truth to that. But I also think that in international football, there's just not very many games. So small elements of luck, which would be even out over 38 games or you know, over a longer period of time, you don't get that in international football. And I think a lot of it is down to luck. I mean, the presence, or yeah, the Spain side that dominated for 6 years, were they really an extraordinarily better side than the team of the 80s or 90s? I think in terms of players, probably not hugely different. But something clicked, and like, you know, it's sort of self-fulfilling that if you lose, and if you're constantly aware of failure, that, you know, that builds up a pressure. And once that breaks, then you know, it is possible to go on and win many things.
All right, so what stands between England and clicking then, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that there are issues that I think it's to do with his consciousness of failure and also a consciousness of, oh, well, you know, the last three World Cups, England have sort of gone out without a fight. There's been a sense of limpness. And I think that's generated this sense that in this World Cup, certainly before the tournament, I think there was a sense that it almost doesn't matter if England do badly as long as they attack. And that, I think you saw in the reaction to the Italy game, that, well, at least they gave it a go, at least there were chances.
Mm.
Well, I think actually the problems of the Italy game were carried over to the Uruguay game. That the problem at the back of the field when you've got Gerrard there, he's not defensively disciplined enough. Tavares was quite candid about that in the press conference after the game, that he said that you know, he deliberately targeted Gerrard. He put Cavani against him. I think the selection of Ladero was we'd expected two banks of four, quite a rigid formation. Picking Ladero meant there was somebody always in Gerrard's face, always in that zone, so, you know, as he went with a diamond. So I think that was a weakness. And I think if England had gone with a 4-3-3 rather than a 4-3-3-1, it would have been ostensibly more defensive, but I think it probably would have been more effective.
Mm. Well, you're very measured about this, Jonathan, but what did you find most frustrating when you watched this game?
Probably the awareness of what the post-mortems would say. And sure enough, you go on Twitter and people are saying, oh, there's not enough passion, or they never attack enough. But you have to earn the right to attack. So, you know, there's a million separate things you can say to go right. But Gerrard, I thought, had an awful game. Rooney, until Barkley came on, I thought was ineffective. Glenn Johnson, low end of setting up a goal, I thought had an awful match. Hart was so skittish. So there was problems all over. Jagielka, I think, had a great game. It's not just one thing. There's not one easy answer. Dave Brailsford, the cycling coach, always says accumulation of small details, accumulation of marginal gains.
Mm.
In every department, if you improve that by 2%, 3%, 5%, if you do that across enough of them, eventually you get critical mass. So it's not about, oh, this player was dreadful, get rid of him, get in a new player. It's not about this formation was dreadful, we need a new formation. It's all of those. And in themselves, none of them are that important. Put them together and it becomes debilitating.
Right. A kind of 5% improvement across the team, and you'd be turning these narrow defeats into wins, you feel?
It felt like an accumulation of marginal losses
exactly.
Today.
Yeah. Shouldn't this be the kind of thing that Roy Hodgson is pinpointing? I mean, without in any way wishing to pin this all on poor old Roy, but shouldn't this be the kind of thing that Roy is actually implementing and noting the fact that Gerrard's being absolutely murdered and maybe sort that out as well? Or switch the formation around?
Yeah, I think that's fair. What's slightly baffling is that he did play a 4-3-3 against Denmark back in March. And it was a little bit stodgy. The front three, which on that day was Sterling, Sturridge and Rooney, didn't quite gel, but there were little flickers there. And I thought the shape of the back seven of the team worked very well that day. Now, maybe he's been hampered by Oxlade Chamberlain not being fit, that he would be an obvious candidate to play in a three in midfield to break forward from there. Maybe Wiltshire, if he's again been fully fit, he could do that. So maybe it's got to do with injuries. I sort of fear that he's got caught up in this sort of mood of, oh, well, they've got to attack, and as long as they attack, that's all right. He's been aware of the ghost of Harry hanging over him. And the knowledge that if England failed, people would say, oh, well, at least if Harry had failed, it would have been this glorious red-blooded football. And he's tried to make his football a bit more red-blooded, and it's actually ended up costing him.
Mm, interesting. Interesting, Jonathan. Where next for you, then?
Well, I'm on Copacabana at the moment. I've just got absolutely drenched in a rainstorm, which I didn't anticipate. Then, unfortunately, I was maybe going to Cuiabá to see Nigeria v Bosnia, but TAM has changed my flight in such a way that the flight I'm meant to be connecting to in São Paulo, I'll arrive 8 hours late to that flight, so that's really not going to work. So my next game is Belgium v Russia in the Atlantic Canal on Sunday.
All right. Well, that'd be nice. Maybe.
Yeah, should be good. Looking forward to it.
All right, then. Excellent. All right, Jonathan. Well, thank you so much for that appraisal. A very perspective-laden appraisal. And, stay out of the rain, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye. JW. Jonathan Wilson. Well, of course, if Italy beat Costa Rica and Uruguay, then England are through with only a 2-0 win against Costa Rica in their own final group game. Right. Because, James, it's the Italians, and if all they need is a draw from the final group game, then have a biscuit.
Biscotto, yeah. Could happen. There's a lot of enthusiasm around Italy, obviously, after the win against England. This sort of emergence of Tiki-Talia.
Tiki-Talia, yeah, but the reaction today from the Italian press to the England defeat was, oh, no, what a disaster. This is the worst possible thing that could happen, because now a win in their next game, which is, of course, on Friday against Costa Rica, doesn't automatically qualify them. But, hey, we'll talk about that later on, because there's still other action to get onto from Thursday. I say other action. You've already done Japan-Greece in all its full glory, haven't you, Scott?
I try my best.
Here's Kevin Coughlin saying, Japan's possession game, Tiki-Tokyo. This is one meme I'm not getting tired of. There was Tiki Taxi from Spain. You had Tiki Talia there.
Yeah. We had Tiki Taco from Mexico.
Oh, yeah. You did, anyway. And Tiki Tokyo. Yeah. And then there was Colombia, Ivory Coast. And Colombia are now through. They're in the knockout stages. I'm excited about this. Scott, did you see this game?
I saw half of it. I was busy writing something for tomorrow.
Yeah. Which half did you see?
The second half.
Well, that's the right half to see of this game. I mean, you saw some blistering action then. You saw the player who is, for many, the standout fella of this tournament so far, James Rodriguez. What did you make of Gervinho's goal? James, what did you make of Gervinho's goal?
I mean, it was the Gervinho we've come sort of accustomed to at Roma, you know, who had a very good season with them. Almost got into double figures in goals, got into double figures in assists. I mean, it's great. Sort of, he went past two players. Sort of great, sort of body swerve. It was just a shame that the keeper got a hand to it, a soft hand, so it just kind of ruined the aesthetic of it. But that was pretty much all Ivory Coast were up to. Even when Drogba came on, you know, there weren't great shakes. I didn't think. I mean, Yaya just kind of looked quite casual. You know, that's what he does. I guess he does. Just walk with the ball often. It does this great sort of walking dribble, but I guess he's so big he doesn't really have to run, he just takes strides. But Colombia, I think, have been with Chile probably the best South American team in the tournament thus far.
Right, and Cuadrado's stock continues to rise. Now, we see him quite a lot during the season, or have seen him quite a lot during the season at Fiorentina, and I, in my unilluminated fashion, regard him as a bit, well, I don't want to say a luxury player, but I think he flatters to deceive in football parlance a bit, i.e. that he's very flash and you know, runs a lot and does clever things with his legs, but gives possession away an awful lot and is much style over substance.
Yeah, I mean, he's been compared to Gervinho, to Nani, in that sense, because he does have this ability to beat players in one-on-ones, to go on these sort of dazzling runs, and then go coast to coast.
So he was putting some gorgeous balls across in this game. So he's effectively proving idiots like me wrong at the moment, isn't he, with his work at Colombia?
But I'm sure if you watch him throughout the season, he proves you right.
Well, I don't know that he does. Lots of clever folk do say that he's their player of the season.
Fiorentina bought out the share that Udinese are having in him today. He put out a statement saying, you know, he's going to be at Fiorentina next season. But obviously, there's a lot of speculation about.
You think this means the opposite, in fact?
Well, no, I think Fiorentina don't need to sell. And Vincenzo Montella said, well, if he does go, I'd be most unhappy. Remember, they sold Jovetic last summer for 30-odd million. Yeah, I think their intention is to keep him, but the interest, obviously, is high. Apparently, right. Barcelona are interested in him buying.
Heavily linked with Barcelona.
But I don't really know why Barca would necessarily need him. I know they like to have these two wide players, and he can play with Alexis, and they're sort of similar in that sense. But I don't know. I'd rather he stays in Italy.
But Fiorentina fans would too. Right, well, there you go. Colombia is through to the knockout stages and looking fine. And that wraps up Thursday. But Friday, you're flicking idly through the pages of your Guardian World Cup guide. What have you found there?
Not a great deal.
Oh.
but it's late.
It is quite late. All right, then. What's going to get you more excited? A chat about Honduras, Ecuador. Chance about France. Well, give me a chance. France, Switzerland, or Italy, Costa Rica?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if France are potentially the real deal, just purely because they have these the sort of cyclical nature of France at World Cups, and they were so bad last time. They were so bad in 2002. Obviously, very good in 98 and 2006. And no one's talked about them beforehand, and everyone just kind of assumed that they would be terrible.
I don't know that they did, Scott.
And they
were like fifth favourites.
Well, I think they were perhaps underestimated because since 2006 they've imploded at every tournament they've been to, and there was that expectation that they might. And they had to go through the playoffs.
They did
2-0 down in that first.
But they were in a group with Spain.
Yeah.
But then again,
I thought Honduras made it quite difficult for them until the red card came.
Right.
But they'd already hit the bar in that time, and their front three were combining quite delightfully.
Right. Well, because I figured that you'd be interested in this whole France thing. A short while ago, we had a quick word with Julien Laurent, who is actually French, to find out what he made of their efforts so far and prospects against Switzerland. Julien, bonsoir.
Bonsoir, James.
Bonsoir. France taking on Switzerland then in Friday's second most important game, many people are calling it.
For us in France, it is the most important. It's probably the final of the group.
Yeah.
You would think so. You know, between the two strongest teams, Switzerland won their first game against Ecuador. We won against Honduras' first game. And I think it's all pan out for a great game.
Right. If you win this game, you likely win the group, and thus you probably avoid Argentina and get either Nigeria or Iran or Bosnia-Herzegovina. That's quite an appetizing thought.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. We have to top the group, clearly, to like you said, have the chance to avoid Argentina in the last 16. I think that was the objective from the start. You know, Switzerland are much better than us in the FIFA rankings. They're in sixth place, while we're in 17th. But despite the fact that they're ahead of us, clearly the objective was to top the group, to beat them as well, to get more confidence, more momentum. The first game was a very good entry in the competition. We did really well, both as a team and in individuals, like Benzema with two goals, or Matuidi, Pogba, Griezmann, and all of that. Now we need to kick on and keep going in like that. And you can sense the boost in confidence from the squad, even for Deschamps. You know, it was also his first ever World Cup game as a manager. And you could tell that they're all very excited about that game against Switzerland because they know how well they've played in the first game and they just want to continue like that.
Right. Junior, the first game, you call it a good entry into the World Cup. How much really can we draw from that, given that A, it was against Honduras, and B, they were down to 10 men for 60 minutes or so?
Yeah, well, I agree that you and I could have probably played for Honduras. So I know it was not the biggest achievement in those players' career. However, it is a World Cup game, and there's no easy World Cup games ever. And, you know, we saw it with Uruguay against Costa Rica. We saw it through these World Cups and before as well. And it was not too much beating them. It was the way we beat them. Even at 11 against 11, I think for those 37 minutes, it was a very convincing performance from the French against a team that basically kicked you around, you know, everywhere on the pitch.
Yeah.
But we should move. We had movement. We had skills on the ball. The midfielders pushed on really well. We were well organized at the back. And like I said, individually as well, there was some very good display. So I know it was only Honduras. And I don't think the players are getting carried away, or the fans or the manager or the media. It's just, you know, we had to win the first game. It's very important to do so, even against a rubbish team. But we did so with a good performance as well. And I think it was just very positive all around for what came next.
All right. What's the big danger then against Switzerland?
I think it's probably, you know the French really well. You know me really well. It's the sort of arrogant size we can have in the way that, you know, we played so well in that first game. Then we would get carried away. And then Benzema would try to do everything on his own. Pogba would try to do everything on his own. Valbuena would do the same. And we would lose a bit of that good team spirit we had in the first game, and that sort of like collective focus that we had in the first game, and we would all try to do it by ourselves, basically. And I think that's the biggest danger. I don't think the French fear Switzerland. I think they fear themselves more than they fear the Swiss, because that's always been our problem. You know, we have that tendency of getting a bit carried away too much and ended up being disappointing because we let ourselves down. That's what happened in previous World Cups, and that's exactly what Deschamps has repeated to the players. we have to keep the same momentum, keep the same idea of playing football like we did against Honduras and also like we did in the previous games before the World Cup started. And if they do so, if they keep focused the same way they did against Honduras, I'm sure we'll be better than Switzerland.
All right. And injury-wise, is everybody fit? Deschamps, is he going to make any changes to the team at all?
Well, Cabaye hasn't trained all week, but he trained tonight. Apparently, there's no problem anymore with his groin, so he'll be able to start tomorrow. So we expect the same starting 11, which means Giroud will stay on the bench and Griezmann will be preferred on the left-hand side with Benzema in the centre, Valbuena on the right. And then in midfield, doesn't change, Pogba, Matuidi, Cabaye. And at the back four, we stay the same with Debuchy, Sako, Varane, and everyone on the left with Lloris in goal.
All right, excellent. Well, listen, we're going to look forward to seeing how that works out against these crazy counter-attacking Swiss. Julien, many thanks for letting us know all that juicy detail. And we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Merci. Julien Laurent, Switzerland. Now, Scott, you were saying people haven't talked too much about France, but Switzerland have some interesting players, haven't been talked about too much, are a lot more exciting than maybe the Switzerland that we saw in the last World Cup, and certainly staged a thrilling finale to their opening match against Ecuador. You remember that they were drawing until pretty much the last kick. They should have been in the lead, but the referee had disallowed wrongly a goal by our friend Drumic. And then there was this brilliant sweeping counter-attack key by Barami. France should afford them plenty of spaces, is that right? If France come at them, there are plenty of spaces for the Swiss counter-attacking machine.
I think this could be quite an evenly matched game because there's balance to France's team. I think obviously their defence, which is quite young but very talented, will come under greater scrutiny. Deschamps played, I think, Raphael Varane and Mamadou Sakho. If you think, 2 years ago, it was Mexes and Rami, so this is their sort of first tournament playing together. But, I mean, France have such great sort of balance in midfield with Cabaye, Matuidi and Pogba that they could be able to quite easily be able to control the game, I think. But Switzerland are apparently quite wary going into this game. The referee that has been allocated, Bjorn Kuipers, he sent off Reto Ziegler in a qualifier for Euro 2012 with Wales, which they think cost them their qualification for tournament.
Refs, eh? From their secret lair under that volcano. They're always out mucking up other people's well-worked plans. Never mind. Well, anyway, whoever wins this game maybe wins the group, and thus, as we were saying with Julian, probably avoids Argentina in the knockout round. And that's pretty big. The other teams you could get from the Argentina group are Iran, Nigeria, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. So you probably want to avoid Argentina, don't you, really? Julian, very confident. We shall see. We shall see. Also on Friday, Honduras, Ecuador, with the crazy situation with their managers. Scott, you're familiar with the situation? They've both got Colombian managers. Honduras's manager is, let me get this straight, because they're the wrong way around, aren't they? Honduras's manager is Luis Suarez, and he used to manage Ecuador. Whereas Ecuador's manager is Reinaldo Rueda, and hang on, he used to manage Honduras. It's like some Hollywood sitcom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but with lots of kicking, because it's Honduras. And there's no Wilson Palacios, because he'll be suspended. And well, what else can we say about this game?
Did Hollywood make sitcoms as such?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think if you'd go to the home of you know, to where sitcoms are filmed, they're all in Hollywood. I mean, they're all filmed at Burbank, you know, on the Warner Brothers lot and that.
All right.
Arrested Development, for example, is Imagine Entertainment.
Where was Seinfeld? Wasn't that a New York sitcom? Or was that just set in New York, but filmed in LA?
Yeah, it's not quite the paradigm of a sitcom I'm thinking of.
You were thinking more of I Love Lucy.
That's one, certainly. Yeah.
Heil, Honey, I'm Home. The short-lived BSB pastiche.
Yeah, never caught that. BSB, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. I'll rephrase that next time we talk about those two managers. And anyway, I've no idea what to say about this game. So I guess the best thing is that we just watch it and then react come Friday's World Cup Football Daily and that. So to finish off, why don't we just have a little bit of a chat about a game that's suddenly become oh so important for England's prospects. And yes, that is Italy-Costa Rica. Could be a game that features Arsenal's two front two, this, because on one hand, you've got Costa Rica's exciting young Joel Campbell, And on the other, you've got Mario Balotelli, subject of suggestions that he's about to be offered an absolutely whopping deal by Arsene Wenger. What do you think, James?
I'm still quite sceptical about
you?
That.
Oh, okay.
Even though his agent has come out and said, yes, there are 10 clubs that could probably afford to buy Balotelli, and Arsenal is one of them. That's true.
Right.
Milan has certainly been quite indifferent in their reaction towards these reports. I mean, Berlusconi, of the last 6 months, has not been particularly impressed with Balotelli's performances on the pitch. He thinks he's a number nine and should spend more time in the penalty area rather than, you know, coming short and involving himself in the play. You know, he needs to score more goals. I think for Milan to sell him, it would be, considering the resources that they have or don't have, it would be a bit of a mistake, even if they were to get another Mario in, like Mario Mandzukic or someone. Whenever Mario's played at a tournament, be it Euro 2012, Confederations Cup, the game against Italy, against England, you know, he has invariably performed and provided big moments. But, I mean, Prandelli was very quick to sort of bring him back down to earth after the England game and said that, you know, he could do so much better. And in fact, he referenced what Berlusconi had said in that, you know, he needs to think of himself as being the finisher of a move rather than just involving himself and getting lost in the play. He needs to concentrate on the end of these actions.
All right, now Italy have had good starts to tournaments before and then made a bit of a mess of the second game. In fact, that's something that occurred quite regularly. Do you think that's what's going to happen against Costa Rica?
They're wary of Costa Rica. In fact, when the draw was made, Prandelli kind of was quick to tell the media in Italy that rather than focus on England and Uruguay, they should spend some time watching Costa Rica. And the way they started is by beating Uruguay has kind of confirmed that. Italy are mindful of the conditions because they're playing in Recife at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They're expecting it to be over 30 degrees, 80% humidity, and he wants there to be timeouts introduced because I think there's a meeting with FIFA before the game, 90 minutes before the game, where they decide on this, and they decided against it at Manaus, and Prandelli thinks that was why, after about 75 minutes or so, the game just died, and Italy had to kind of look to see it out, and England couldn't do anything because the conditions just drained them, and that's why Marchisio said he was hallucinating.
He certainly did.
I think they're wary of the threat that Joel Campbell and that can pose, and also the weather.
All right. Hoppy says, AC Jimbo, I remember you calling Andrea Pirlo a human handbrake on the Italian national team in a garden video a few years ago. Full context here is that this was back in Euro 2008, if I'm not mistaken. As I say, wrongly, I think I did feel that he was, although meticulous in his work with possession, possibly not the most dynamic in terms of springing a lightning break, etc.
Ancelotti used to say that you'd give him the ball and it's like putting it in a safe, but the safe door did open very slowly.
Oh, did he say that?
He did, yeah.
Well, I get stuff wrong all the time, as you're all too aware, but I do think the Pirlo has really, really blossomed in the last, what would you say, certainly since Euro 2008.
Yeah, but I'd say in this country, 2012, the way his profile has risen, I mean, it's almost like, I don't know whether we should call a performance as Latam, but like that when he scored those four goals against England, all of a sudden, this island that we're still on, even in this information age where you can watch any game on the planet and access any sort of news about it, are still kind of shocked. Oh, the people on the continent, what they're saying is right. This guy is actually incredible. And it's a shame, really, because they discover him really late. He's what, in his mid-30s? Latam's in his 30s. Yeah, it's like, well, you should have been wise to this and appreciated it earlier.
All right, so you've got Zlatan and Pirlo now. Who would be your player that if you... And Scott, do join us on this one. who would be the player who is still regarded as a bit of a foreign fairy tale?
I think one of the things about Pirlo,
though,
is... And I completely agree that we as a country kind of missed out on the golden age of Pirlo. But there's a lot of great, maybe not quite at Pirlo standards, but a lot of great midfielders about, but there's not very many great 33, 34, 35-year-old midfielders about. And there's something quite romantic about, like, an old boy jogging on and just taking control, taking charge. And, you know, it's like when you saw latter-day Paul Scholes, there was something special about that. Gary McAllister in his sort of latter-day pomp at Liverpool. It's kind of, you know, this old boy shuffling around with this big beard, and still he's better than all these fit young men.
Absolutely. And that's why I was so wrong about this whole thing about the pace, because it is that calmness, it is that measuredness that makes him so wonderful to watch. No, I mean, it is so nice to see him just casually strolling and stroking it around through the midst of the maelstrom. Anyway, right, okay, well, we're looking forward to that then. Pirlo and company taking on Costa Rica and all their hustle and bustle and tico-tacker. Yeah. They're Los Ticos, aren't they?
Their coach is a big Italian football fan.
Is he?
I think he went to see...
Pinto.
Yeah. He went to see Argentina play Italy in the 78 World Cup, and Italy beat them. They were the only team to beat Argentina in that tournament, I think. 1-0. And ever since then, that kind of convinced him to become a coach. He studied Lippi, Trapp. He says he knows them like the back of his hand.
Right.
I don't know what's on the back of his hand. Probably a mole.
There you go. That all awaits on Friday. We're going to be back as ever Friday late as we look forward as well to the weekend. Do try and join us for that. James Horncastle, you'll be here as well.
Yep.
Lovely. Scott, thanks for stopping by this evening.
That's okay. Sorry, I couldn't have been more help.
No, that's okay. Don't worry. They won't all be Japan greases. And many thanks to guest producer Ian and you, listener. Have yourself a super Friday. Speak to you soon.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.